Ultimately, we've got the firepower and the naval strength to crush almost any rebellion which could be mounted. They know we don't want to do that, of course, but they know we can if we have to. More to the point, they know we will. Emperor Caleb's face was hard, determined, and as Charlian gazed at it in the moonlight, she realized her own expression matched his. Neither of them wanted bloodshed that could be avoided. Neither of them wanted to see towns or cities burned, men executed for treason against their new emperor and empress. Neither of them wanted to be forced to resort to the harsh measures of suppression, which the Safeholdian rules of war enshrined for conquered provinces. But given the threats which ringed them about, and the long history of Coruscantian enmity for both Karis and Chisholm, neither would hesitate if it became necessary either. Well, assuming any rebellions are minor enough, that General Cherman can deal with them out of his available resources, what's next? She asked after a moment.
That's something you and I, and Merlin, are going to spend quite a bit of this winter thinking over, love, he replied. The truth of the matter is that what we've just finished was the easy part. By spring, Magwer's going to have made more progress than I'd like to think about where his galleon fleet is concerned. Thank God he wasted all that time and money on galleys first. But from what Merlin's seen so far, someone's actually read Earl Thirsk's reports. And by now, they've gotten enough information about the new model artillery that we're going to be facing well-armed galleons in someone else's hands. Mind you, they're not going to know what to do with them as well as we will, and I intend to keep it that way, by pruning them back as brutally as possible, as often as possible. As my father said, it's important for any Temple Admiral to be half-defeated in his own mind before he ever puts to sea against us. Aside from that, though, I don't know what our best option is going to be. I'm hoping you and Baron Green Mountain can help me figure that out. At the moment, it's sort of like a battle between a doom whale and a great dragon. In our element, we should be able to beat any fleet the Temple can throw against us, even if the numerical odds are against us, if only because we'll know what we're doing and they won't, yet. But if we try to put an army ashore against mainlander armies, we'll get our asses kicked. Not at first, maybe, but in the end. We simply can't get deep enough on the mainland to force the Temple to surrender before the Temple figures out how to duplicate our weaponry advantages.
You're saying it's going to be a standoff? A stalemate?
I'm saying it may be a standoff. Or that it may start off that way, at least. But the Temple is going to be trying to figure out ways to get at us, even while we're trying to figure out ways to get at them. And with all those smart and determined people on both sides trying to find a way, I'm fairly sure one will turn up. Ideally, it will be on our own terms, not theirs, but I'm not foolhardy enough to try to guarantee that. So far, we've come up golden at almost every point. Eventually, we have to stub our toes, Charlie. The trick is to make sure we don't fall down and break our necks when we do.
Well, she said, snuggling down and pressing her cheek back into his shoulder. As you say, we've got a lot of smart people on our side, too, including you and me. And we've got Merlin and Archbishop Michael, and I'm fairly sure we've got God. Between the lot of us, we ought to be able to handle anything someone like Clintan can throw at us.
3. City of Zion, Temple Lands.
I don't like it, Samuel.
Howard Wilson shook his head, his expression grave, as he and his older brother sat facing one another across the remnants of their supper. An autumn rainstorm beat against the huge window of the dining room, running down the transparency in sheets that turned the gathering evening's cloud-struck gloom beyond into a wavering tapestry.
like some oracle's obscure vision of an uncertain future.
There are quite a few things I don't much care for at the moment myself, Howard, Samuel replied. Would you care to be a bit more specific?
Don't try to be humorous, his brother growled. I'm not in the mood for it.
Under the circumstances, I don't think any of us can afford to simply abandon our sense of humor, Samuel pointed out. Not unless we want to brood on all our potential troubles until it drives all of us mad, and Clinton can be shut of us without any effort on his part at all.
Very funny, Howard said sourly.
Then he drew a deep breath and straightened in his chair.
But probably accurate, he conceded. Mind you, I don't think I'm going to find a great many laughing matters this winter.
We'll find them where we can, Samuel said philosophically. For the rest, all we can do is trust God.
I'd feel better if we had his promise that trusting in him would bring us all through this with whole skins.
So would I. Unfortunately, he never promised that. So go ahead and tell me what it is you've got on your mind tonight.
It's the stridency with which Clinton and Trenaire are riding Caleb's supposed responsibility for Hector's assassination, Howard said.
What? You don't think he did it? Samuel asked innocently.
Forget you're a Schulerite and stop playing Shanwei's advocate, Howard half growled. First, no, I don't think he did it. I've told you that before. He's too smart to do something this stupid. And second, whether he was responsible or not isn't really germane to what's bothering me.
Then what is germane? Samuel asked, without, Howard noticed, ever actually saying whether or not he believed Caleb Armok had ordered Prince Hector's murder.
It's the way they're going about it. Stacking it on top of all of Karis's unprovoked aggression against Delphirok.
Howard shook his head.
Couple that with the address from the throne, and what do you see? You see them preparing the ground to declare holy war as soon as the ice melts in Sing Wu's passage. That's what you see, he said, answering his own question.
Probably so, Samuel agreed, his own expression turning rather more serious. On the other hand, if they weren't using those pretexts, you know they'd have found others. It's the nature of the beast.
Krakens do tend to attack when they smell blood, don't they? Howard said bitterly.
Yes, they do, Samuel sighed. On the other hand, there's not very much we can do about that, aside from seeing what the power of prayer can accomplish. Which is why I'm looking at rather more immediate concerns.
Duquesne?
Exactly. Samuel nodded heavily. I don't know exactly what's been going on inside that man, Howard, but I'm strongly inclined to believe we're seeing a genuine regeneration on his part. Which, of course, puts him in a position of deadly danger, that close to Clinton. The last thing Clinton can afford is a man who takes the writ seriously, sitting there in the middle of the group of four.
Actually, Howard said seriously, that could be Duquesne's best protection. Clinton's constitutionally incapable of taking the faith of anyone who doesn't agree with him seriously. Or rather, taking anyone who doesn't agree with him as a serious threat, if he's motivated by genuine faith.
No? Then what about Duquesne's warning?
Jasper Clinton's not worried about us because of our faith, Samuel. He's worried about us because we represent a threat to his power base. And, Howard added unhappily, because he thinks we may make a splendid diversion.
Exactly, Samuel said again. He'd been more than a little surprised by Duquesne's warning. The Treasurer General had taken the risk of speaking to him personally, and despite Wilson's own efforts to speak in diplomatic circumlocutions, Duquesne had come straight to the point with devastating frankness.
Clinton has to have someone inside the circle, Samuel, his brother said now, his voice tense.
We've been operating for a long time, Samuel replied, there are any number of other ways we might have given ourselves away.
Of course there are other ways we might have given ourselves away, Howard said impatiently. But that's not what happened, and you know it as well as I do. If Duquesne is right, Clinton is only waiting until the most opportune moment from his perspective. And he wouldn't be waiting unless he was confident he knew everything we're doing. Knew we weren't going to suddenly disappear before he's ready to pounce. And the only way he can know that is that he has someone on the inside telling him about our deliberations, our plans. And since we haven't added anyone new, it has to be someone who was already there.
Samuel's mouth had tightened as his brother laid out his devastating analysis. It wouldn't have bothered him as much if he hadn't come to exactly the same conclusions himself.
Unfortunately, I don't have any idea who that someone might be, he pointed out. Do you?
If I did, you'd be the first to know. Or possibly...
Howard showed his teeth in a most unpriestly smile.
The second.
You really need to forget the fact that you used to be a temple guardsman, Samuel told him. Direct action isn't always the best option. Although, in this case, I have to admit I'd be sorely tempted myself.
All well and good, but since we don't know who it is, what do we do?
I don't know, Samuel admitted. All I do know is that we've spent too long, committed too much of ourselves to this task, to simply cut and run. I'm not prepared to abandon God's church to men like Clinton and Trenaire, Howard. If I have to die, there are far worse causes.
No doubt, but there are also far better deaths, Howard said grimly, as he recalled Eric Dinis's fate.
Yes, there are. Unfortunately, we've both just agreed Clinton wouldn't be giving us this much rope if he didn't have someone inside. He's watching us, and there's no way we can give all the members of the Circle warning without warning Clinton's spy as well. Which means Clinton will know anything we do if we try to alert the others.
Don't we still owe them that warning, whatever might happen?
Howard's expression was troubled, and Samuel nodded.
Of course we do. We just can't give it to them anyway.
So what can we do?
I've already started doing what I can, Samuel said. I'm getting as many as possible of our junior members out of Zion on one pretext or another. It's taking some ingenuity to manufacture enough routine missions for me to get them sent away with winter coming on, but I've already gotten over a dozen of our bishops and upper priests out of the city. And on missions that are going to keep them out of the city until after snowfall. I don't know if I can come up with something to get any of the archbishops out without arousing Clinton's suspicions and causing him to strike sooner. Conier is about the only exception to that, since he's just about due for his winter pastoral visit to Glacier Heart. But as long as you and I are still here, Clinton should feel fairly confident that he can put his hand on us any time he chooses.
Somehow that fails to inspire me with a great deal of personal reassurance,
Howard observed dryly.
I know.
Samuel smiled at his brother, knowing Howard could see the love in his eyes.
I'm sorry I got you into this.
Nonsense. Making ourselves a pain in the ass to people like Clinton and Trenaire has been part of the family business for as long as I can remember. In fact, it's been a Wilson speciality since the creation itself.
Howard's tone had shifted very slightly, and he arched an eyebrow at his brother.
I know,
Samuel replied after a moment.
Do you think...
No,
Samuel shook his head firmly.
Samuel, if we don't use the key now, when can we use it?
The key was never meant for use against those within the church, Samuel replied. Not only that, but it's a weapon of last resort, and it can only be used once. Schuller made that crystal clear. And do you truly think Caleb and Karis have crossed the threshold he set yet?
Of course not, Howard said. We've agreed on that from the outset. But this schism is getting deeper and deeper, Samuel. It's only too likely that it will slide over into genuine heresy sooner or later. Whatever Stainer or Caleb want, if Clinton keeps driving this way. And if worse comes to worst for the Circle, if there's no one left to stop him.
He let his voice trail off, and Samuel nodded somberly.
I know, he said, I know, but that's one reason Pater is in Karis, Howard.
Howard sat gazing at him for several seconds, then sighed heavily.
There are times I wish we'd been born into another family, he said with a lopsided smile.
So do I, sometimes, Samuel agreed. Unfortunately, we weren't. It's why the rest of the vicarate is so damned fond of us in the first place.
Howard chuckled. Then he shook his head.
You know, I was glad from the outset that Pater stayed in Karis, but I hadn't thought about it in terms of the key.
That's because I never told you I'd given it to him, Samuel said. Not that I ever really expected it to come to this when I helped Clinton arrange his assignment there. In fact, I can't honestly say that I saw any of this coming when he first went to Telesburg. But God always has worked in mysterious ways. This must have been what he had in mind, and at least Pater's out of Clinton's reach at the moment.
And pray God he stays there, Howard said softly.
He himself had never produced children, and as he considered what someone like Clinton might well do to the families of his enemies in the vicarate, he was profoundly grateful for that fact.
I'm sending word to Lisbeth through Angelique, Samuel said quietly. I'm telling her to stay home and keep the other children with her instead of bringing them to Zion this winter.
You think Clinton won't be watching them?
I know Clinton will be watching them.
Samuel's voice was grim.
But I know he had to be watching Adirai Dinis and her boys, too. And Angelic's arrangements got them out. I think she can do the same for us. I pray so, at any rate.
You'll send them to Karis?
Where else can they find anything remotely like safety?
No place I can think of, Howard admitted.
Obviously, I'll also be warning her to make her own arrangements, Samuel continued. Although, frankly, I'd be astonished to discover that she hasn't already given some thought to that. She's not the sort to desert a sinking ship prematurely, but she definitely is the sort to prepare her escape route ahead of time. God bless her.
Amen, Howard agreed with a quirky smile.
And, Samuel said, looking into his brother's eyes once again, I'm going to send her another letter. This one for Pater, just in case.
4. Royal Palace, City of Talkaira, Kingdom of Delphirak. The cool breeze blowing in off Lake Erden plucked at Iris Dykon's hair like playful fingers. Evening was setting in across the enormous lake, and she enjoyed the familiar sight of a rippling sheet of water. Yet, whatever else it might be, the lake wasn't Monchir Bay. She missed the surf, the smell of salt, the smell of tidal marshes, the sense of the colliding life of land and sea, across the hard-packed sand of the tide line and the softer, looser sand of the dunes. And she missed her father. She stood on the battlemented wall of King James II's palace on its rocky hill above the city of Talkaira. It was both a cruder and an older palace than her father's palace in Manchir. Despite its size, Delphirak had never been as rich a realm as Coruscant, and James's family had tended to rely rather more heavily upon the Iron Fist to maintain its authority. The occasional restiveness that technique had provoked had required a palace that was still a castle, a fortress which could be defended at need. Although both the king and Queen Hylan assured her that those days were long past now.
"But I thought that about father, too," she thought, and brushed away a tear with one angry hand. "Never let them see you cry. I remember you telling me that, father. I remember everything."
Her hands settled on the hard, weathered stone of the battlements and tightened until her knuckles stood out whitely. She wondered, looking back, if her father had somehow known this was coming. If that was the true reason he'd gotten her and Diven out of Coruscant. She hoped not. She hoped he'd been truthful with her in the last conversation they would ever have. But whatever he'd been thinking, whatever his final motive, he had gotten them out. And one day, Caleb and Charlian of Caris would discover just how costly that was going to prove. She stared out into the gathering evening, and the eyes of her dead mother were hard, hard, as she gazed unblinkingly into the wind. She was fortunate to have Philip. She knew that, even if there were times she wanted to scream at him. He'd been a spymaster too long, she thought, forgotten how to think any way except in the cold, analytical fashion of a chess player. His insistence that they still had to keep their minds open to the possibility that someone besides Caleb might have given the order was probably appropriate for a spy, but there was no question in Iris's mind. No question of who was responsible or who would ultimately pay. In the meantime, she would take Philip's tactical advice. He was right that the two of them somehow had to keep Diven out of the church's clutches. No matter how fervently the group of four might have announced its recognition of him as Coruscant's legitimate ruler, he was only a little boy. Someone like Clinton would twist him like a pretzel, destroy him as casually as stepping on a fly, if it served his purposes. Iris had no illusions in that regard, any more than she had any illusions about the basis for King James's attentive solicitude where Diven was concerned.
"Such a little boy," she thought, her eyes prickling once again. "Such a little boy to be caught in such deep water. They'll suck the marrow out of you if they have the chance, Diven. They'll use you, then throw you away. Unless someone stops them."
And Iris knew who that someone had to be.
"Advise me, Philip," she thought. "Advise me. Help me keep him safe. Keep him alive. He's not just my baby brother now. He's my prince, and all I have left. All that butcher Caleb has left me. No one is going to do to him what they did to father and Hector. As God is my witness, I'll rip out their throats with my bare teeth before I let that happen."
No doubt it was foolish for a single 18-year-old girl to think such thoughts. No doubt King James would pat her on the head, tell her to run along, and leave the worrying to those better suited to such tasks. No doubt Jaspar Clinton would be amused at the thought that she could even consider setting her puny will and minuscule resources against his own plans for her brother. And no doubt Caleb of Caris would laugh at the thought that someday she would see him suffer every pain he had inflicted upon her and her family twice over. But, she told herself, promised God himself, as she stared bleak-eyed into the face of the night wind blowing out of the north,
they'll discover their mistake. Oh, yes, they'll discover their mistake.
We hope you've enjoyed By Heresies Distressed, a Macmillan audiobook from Tor Books. This program was produced by Robert Kessler. Executive Producer, Laura Wilson. Text copyright 2009 by David Weber.
Production copyright 2009 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.